Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Size, Ray, is that Deshaun Watson, if somebody is going to trade for him, it's going to take an absurd offer. You know, I was talking to somebody in Washington today, and they said, Chase Young, Terry McLaurin, four high draft picks. That's absolutely crazy. I said, I know. And someone's going to do that. Whenever this trade is done, assuming it's done when, if Houston has, you know, that if Houston gets what would be justified in this case, I think it's got to be six pretty good chips, because there has never been a time in NFL history, and I mean never. Steve Young was traded at 25 for a 2 and a 4. You know, when San Francisco got him from Tampa. But look at what Steve Young was at the time. Steve Young was on his way to be a failure as an NFL quarterback. He was awful in Tampa, and that obviously was because of the surroundings. There has never been in NFL history a time when in a golden age of quarterbacks, which we are in right now, and a top five quarterback goes on the market at age 25. It's just never happened, and I think that's why so much of this is, you know, people are saying, are you out of your mind? Part of it, because someone, if this trade gets done, I believe that someone's going to pay, everybody is going to do a triple take at what someone pays for Deshaun Watson.
So putting aside the Watson part of it, is the valuation either so high on Cousins or so low on Jimmy Garoppolo that you really think it would be Jimmy Garoppolo and a top 12 pick for Kirk Cousins?
Now, that's a really good question. I don't know. You know, this is not like I'm saying I think the 49ers will offer this. This is me saying, okay, how can you add up enough compensation from Houston, okay? How can you add up enough compensation to Houston in exchange for Deshaun Watson? And that is where you start to come up with things like that. Do I think that the 49ers are going to do this? No, I don't. But if it is going to happen, if either the 49ers are going to get him or if the 49ers are going to be a vehicle to help get him, these are the kind of things that it's going to take in order to get him.
Peter King here on 95.7 The Game. We love a good quarterbacking rumor. There's no doubt. A little rumor here is that Jimmy Garoppolo would be willing to waive a no trade. I don't know where that came out of, but it certainly makes things interesting. Certainly the most interesting that happened in the NFL last week was the trade of Carson Wentz. It actually went down. Where is the more fascinating side of the equation now? What Wentz does in Indianapolis, or what the Eagles do in the crater of his departure?
The Eagles are walking around just saying what happened. It's like there's been an explosion in their world, and they don't really know how exactly this happened. 3 years ago, they're having that parade on Broad Street in Philadelphia with 2 million people lining the route. I mean, it's absolutely incredible that, you know, I'd say 6 months ago, nobody in Philadelphia could have seen any situation that, or you know, that Doug Peterson would be gone or that Carson Wentz would be gone. And now Doug Peterson's fired and Carson Wentz is traded for 40 cents, on 30 cents on the dollar. It's absolutely incredible. But I do think that this is a situation some of Carson Wentz is making. You know, he is a guy who just didn't I just don't think he handled the situation properly in Philadelphia.
Yeah, the dauber went down and it never came back up.
He went bat crap when they drafted Jalen Hurts. And, you know, he didn't accept that well. He didn't accept coaching well. And then he basically said, I'm going to take my ball and go home. And, you know, look, I made the point in my column today. There's another guy, another quarterback in the NFL, who watched while he was still, he thought, in his prime. And he watched as his team picked a quarterback in the second round. And in the first year, after the quarterback was picked in the second round, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. In the third year, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. And in the fourth year, Jimmy Garoppolo was traded and Tom Brady won the MVP. And so, you know, that is how you handle it when someone says to you, for whatever reason, we think we need backstopping at the quarterback position. That's how you handle it. You don't handle it by, you know, by acting the way, however he acted. I mean, the proof is in, Carson Wentz being so dead set on being traded, thinking that he was being jobbed by Philadelphia. He wasn't. I mean, the guy got hurt twice, you know, to end his year. And the Eagles said, I'm sorry, we don't want Nate Sudfeld or Josh McCown to be the guy who we got to rely on to win a Super Bowl. So, you know, I think it was some immaturity on the part of Carson Wentz as well.
Peter, always appreciate your time, and just let it be a lesson to you. Every time you type the word Garoppolo, you might as well be texting us your phone number and saying, call me, I'm asking for it.
My Thank pleasure, you. Guys. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Peter King here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, it's time to score a BMW from BMW of San Francisco. Go to scorebmw.com right now and register for your chance to win a new car. That's it. Registration ends Wednesday at 10 a.m. It takes only 3 minutes. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Go to scorebmw.com right now. And on Wednesday, we're going to pick a person at random who will win an authentic Dubs jersey and also get the chance to guess the final score of the Golden State LA game on Sunday, February 28th. And if you guess that score correctly, boom, you're going to win a 2020 BMW of San Francisco. BMW of San Francisco, the ultimate BMW center and the ultimate city. Go register. You have until Wednesday morning. Scoreabmw.com. You can find BMW San Francisco in the city at Howard in South Van Ness. You can find them online at BMWSF.com. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Again, you got a quarterback rumor? We'll talk about it. That's what you do on Sports Talk Radio. Peter King just stopped on by to talk about his latest, whether the quarterback market even exists anymore. I guess beauty's in the eye of the beholder, or maybe beauty is in the eye of Deshaun Watson, who the Houston Texans are saying is not going to be traded. So what are we talking about? I get it. But we love a good rumor here, and we'll always kick it around. We're going to get back to what the Warriors just went through this weekend, what they've got in front of them this weekend. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Right before we got to Peter, one of our favorite callers out there was placed on hold, Robin in San Francisco. Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call. I've been somewhat of a volume caller today, but I just have to know. I have four quick things, Damon, and the last one is the reason why I'm calling. I first want to say the way that Draymond acted, you know, my mother, she would have whooped us. That's like acting out in the grocery store. I would have got my butt whooped. But anyway, I want to say, I was thinking if Draymond was suffering from the disease of me. I know he's acted like this before. I know he has a pattern. But what really disturbed me the most about his behavior and what makes me think this is when he butted his nose into the Andre Drummond thing. And I just could not understand why he would do that. And in particular, when it doesn't seem like the Warriors, that's their culture. That's just one thing, light bulb that went off in my head. The second thing is that I felt so sorry for the players at the end of the game. Damon, did you see the way Pascal was looking? It was like all the air went out the room.
Oh, totally. It was look, that had potential to be the win of the year, given that you're doing it without Steph Curry, and it turns into as frustrating a loss as you'll have all year long.
And they just stood there, and you see Kerr. Kerr looked, he looked drained on the Zoom call. That's the second thing. He totally looked drained. And then I want to say these are moments that we can learn, though. You can always learn from bad things. Watermaker, how come all the rest of the team players didn't call a timeout? Maybe Kerr can teach that. And also, even though Dre is not on the floor, don't you think players are smart enough to call and say double, double, double? So I don't know if that's a coaching breakdown or if that's just a lack of IQ. And the last thing that I want to say is on that technical, because it happened so fast and I haven't watched the game, I've heard three different things from the shows today. Did he get a technical for saying something smart to Gordon Hayward? Did he get something smart for saying something to somebody on the sidelines? Because that technical came late, and I said he couldn't have got a technical for saying something for Gordon Hayward because they were laughing. He was even laughing.
I know. So that's the thing. I think that's where the spark of anger came from. And Robin, thanks as always. Again, you're allowed one call to us. I don't know what you're doing with other shows, but one call to us is always good. You have not exceeded your volume of today's afternoon show. That's for sure. Always good to hear from you. I believe the first tech was taunting of Gordon Hayward.
Now, yeah, the referees answered that question post-game. Right, it was for talking to Gordon Hayward.
Now, whether or not that should have happened in the first place is totally up for interpretation. I thought it would – look, again, the thing that I think is as frustrating about this as anything else is that we understand who Draymond Green is. We understand what his reputation is. There is an acute understanding of his inability to kind of correct this, and here it is again. And he says he understands it. And again, we just keep on making the same mistake in terms of emotion governing a moment. And he has to know that he is never going to get the benefit of the doubt, man. It just, you know that, you know, I know that you guys know that. I bet you every single Golden State Warrior knows that. Why Draymond Green doesn't operate in that universe where he fully understands that no benefit of the doubt will be extended to him by a single official in this league is, again, you can't brag about your IQ and not understand this in the same sentence. It's hard to do anyways.
Yeah, I just keep going back to the fact that time and score. I mean, it's, you know, even if you want to overlook all the other stuff, even if you want to say it's a bad technical, even if you want to say, you know, he's an emotional player, time and score. The rules are different for leaders than they are for everybody else. Time and score.
Yeah. I mean, Ray's saying it perfectly. The rules are different for leaders. And we know Draymond sees himself as a leader. We know he is a good leader to this team in many, many ways. This is a failure of leadership, period.
And maybe that's why Kerr was a little bit exacerbated, because maybe he feels like he hasn't done enough to get his team through this moment. I don't know. Here is Steve Kerr after the game on the final 10 seconds in the game and how chaotic the entire ending of the game was in Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unwind. But if you just want to cut to the chase, it's a very difficult call on a loose ball that becomes a jump ball that, you know, they get a timeout on, especially because in the exact same situation, I was trying to call a timeout when Brad had the ball at the top of the key when they forced the jump ball just prior to that. So given that the exact same thing happened back to back, only we actually had possession of the ball when I tried to call timeout. And then watching the replay after the game, it's a loose ball. You know, the ball's actually bouncing on the floor. Draymond dives after it. In my estimation, should be another jump ball. As for the technicals, Draymond can't do that. He knows that. He made a terrible mistake getting teed up and giving them the chance to shoot two free throws and tie the game.
So there was Steve Kerr after the game, and again, we're not just going to continue to relitigate something that I know a lot of shows have talked about over and over again, but we needed our bite of this apple for sure, and I think we've taken a big one. I kind of want to change the focus a little bit, talk about the shame of it all. Kelly Oubre was robbed of a moment where he might have signed a win larger than any other Golden State Warrior, and Brad Wanamaker has been pretty frustrating, I think, to anyone who's been watching him all year. Brad Wanamaker had one of his better games, but boy, I still walked away wanting more from what he was promised to be. Guys, Brad Wanamaker has not really fit his role. He hasn't. He was brought in to be like the world-beaten veteran who has been there, done there, seen it all. You can knock down an open look. You're going to make the right choice. You're not going to get the team into trouble. You know, erupts for 12 points every now and then, not really expected to do that. Give you a little bit of decent defense. And unfortunately for Brad Wanamaker, he is not a lot of those things that you kind of expected to get out of, like I said, a world-beaten veteran who has seen the highest of highs and the lowest of professional lows. And he still makes mistakes that I would be, I think, more comfortable with Jordan Poole making. I'd like to see Nico Mannion out there making mistakes like that more than Brad Wanamaker. Jeremy Lin, it could be time. I'm how do we describe Kelly Oubre Jr. a couple weeks ago? He is the blackjack table. I'm about to leave. Brad Wanamaker is the casino I think I want out of.
The biggest issue is he just can't shoot. I mean, I don't know that he's been a lie in terms of the promise of a steadier backup point guard hand. But when you're shooting 35% from the field and 23 from the three-point line, that's not good enough, period. And you just can't. Yeah, like you said, if Jordan Poole or Nico Mannion's doing that, at least you feel like you're hopefully building towards something that might be of value in the future. When a 31-year-old Brad Wanamaker's doing it,
it's hard.
Don't be a specialist if you're not special. It's pretty much that. I mean, he has one thing to do. He's not doing it, which makes him sort of a non-contributor.
And, I mean, just last year he was 45% from the field, 36% from three. If he was doing everything else he was doing exactly the same but had those shooting percentages, we would not be having this conversation.
Yeah, he'd be fitting the bill. That's what you're brought here to do. Just come on in and make sure leads don't evaporate. We're not even going to ask you to protect the entire lead or hold the lead or the line. Just make sure it doesn't evaporate too much. When the second unit's in, it's not a disaster. That's all we're looking for. And I don't know if Brad Wanamaker is going to start giving you that type of performance game in, game out. 888-957-9570. Charles is in San Jose. Charles, welcome. You're on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. What's up?
Hi. Nice to be on the air with you guys. Listen to you guys all the time. I usually text, but I'm really frustrated right now. I'm frustrated because no one's bringing up what really happened. We all know the situation with Wanamaker. Kerr tried to get the foul call. I mean, tried to get the timeout. He couldn't get it. Okay, that is what it is. The jump ball, Gordon Hayward, the situation, that was BS too. Okay, fine. The problem here is no one's bringing up the fact that the reason why Draymond, he knew subconsciously or consciously, 95% of the refs will not want to be the deciding factor for the game. They will not want to give him a tech and have the score change because they don't want to be the effective result of a game. Draymond knew that. And that's why he probably went a little further than he should have. And once he got the first one, it was over. He's going to get the second one. It's gone from then. So that's what my thought. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just really frustrated.
Yeah, no, look, he double dog dared him. He really did. And that's the frustrating part because the only thing you have to do is shut up. That's it. Just bite your bottom lip, man. The world is in your corner, prepared to make whatever argument post-game that you want to make in-game. Like, all you got to do is shut up and win a basketball game and everyone's going to talk about how great you are. Like, that's it, man. That's it. And it's his mouth. And there's this whole, like, there's an element of nobility attached to it. Like, oh, that's just the temperature that his stove runs at. Look, there are a lot of diehard, slit-your-throat level competitors out there who know when to ixnay on the mouth and yay. I mean, it just straight up, it happens. Guys, get it. Draymond just cannot stop flapping his lips. And I don't know why. Because he's so smart. Everything that he does and says in measured moments, you walk away going, God, that guy could be the commissioner one day. He's brilliant. He's brilliant. He's got a brilliant basketball mind. But maybe he has no mind for understanding people or what his place is in a group conversation. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't get it. He's got way too many gray hairs in that head of his to be doing this still.
Well, and here's the big thing to me is, like we're saying, and honestly, even if Draymond had gotten the first tech, but not the second, and they had lost on a tough shot, I think he'd have a lot of defenders today.
Yeah, that's hoops.
I really do. So it's that inability to control your temper, even if the thought goes through your head, well, I can push this further. It's the end of the game. The refs don't want to make that call. Why? Why are you trying to push it at all? You just have to know, as Ray said, time and score. And it's not the time to test those boundaries. It just is not. And here's the thing that I think we've mentioned sort of versions of. But right now, today, right now, if they had held on against Orlando and not blown that game against Charlotte, the Warriors would be percentage points behind Portland for fifth in the Western Conference. In other words, they'd be in the sixth seed. And instead, they're eighth. And it's not inconceivable that those two games could make the difference at the end of the season as well.
There, you just raised probably the best point of all the ones we've talked about. There's an enormous difference, not just between sixth and seventh, but between eighth and ninth. If you're eighth, you only have to win one game against the nine. If you're the nine, you got to win two. That makes it twice as hard. And I don't know that, you know, that this is a question of Draymond's IQ as much as it is, you know, him sort of is losing his place for a second. But again, for a guy with his on-court leadership skills, he's got to know that there are times when you either modify your tone of voice or you ignore the slight. I mean, the reason why he got suspended in 2016 is because he couldn't ignore the slight. And there are some times when you just go, you know what? Time and score. You know, I mean, there are players in this league who understand time and score completely. One of them is on their team. You know, two of them, if Klay Thompson was active. Time and score matters. You know, it matters, you know, when you're in first, it matters when you're in 10th. The only time it doesn't matter is if you're 14th. But when you're in what they're in, you know, where every game, frankly, is the difference between 6th and 9th, you know, there are luxuries you don't get. You don't get to claim, well, my motor just revs high. Well, you know what? You can take your foot off the, you know, off the pedal. In that way, you know, depending on, you know, the time of the game and the importance of it.
Yeah, the Warriors don't have a let's blow all the motors we can lap in the field of a race car anymore. It's not who they are. They need to drive a lot more carefully.
To that point, we've talked so much about margin of error and all that. They're entering what I think you could describe as the toughest stretch in their first half schedule to close out what we know of at the NBA schedule right now. They have 5 out of 6 games on the road, the home game against the Charlotte team that just beat you in this horrifying fashion, and of those 5 road games, 4 of them are parts of 2 back-to-backs in different cities. No, yeah. And other than the New York Knicks, all these teams are tough. You know, the Lakers obviously are the toughest, but all these teams are tough. So, you know, you're now looking at a situation where if you don't go 3-3, you could start to slip out of the playoff picture altogether. And 3-3 is not going to be easy.
No, it won't. This is a you don't want to go into half playing a lousy couple minutes, and you don't want to go into halftime of your season break playing a lousy few games in a stretch right here. If the Warriors are going to right the ship, they're going to have to do it almost exclusively on the road against tough playoff-bound opponents when you look at the schedule, and it ain't going to get easy. This is George Los Altos. Hello, George.
Hey, guys. I've listened to so many comments about Draymond needs to this and Draymond needs to that. My comment is that I think Draymond is incapable of controlling his temper. This guy is a borderline basketball savant. All right, he knows the game probably better than anyone in the league, but he cannot control himself on the court. But game 5 in the playoffs, 3 years ago, getting suspended, ridiculous. What he did the other night, ridiculous. I can go on and on. He cannot control it. He needs to, and shame on me for saying this because it's probably not my place, but he really needs to talk to someone about how to control it because he cannot be taught by a teammate or implored by a teammate or a coach to say, Draymond, you got to stop doing that. I don't think he can control it.
Look, I hear what you're saying on one hand, George, I really do, and thanks so much for the call. I also believe that full-grown adults are in control of their own faculties unless there is some sort of chemical imbalance, which I do not believe Draymond Green has. He can't do it. He can't do it. I hope he can because the man is a father. He's raising a child or children. Like, of course he can control his temper and his anger in certain situations. This whole, athletes, they're pinioned under their own emotions, can't control. I mean, it's like basically saying, well, you know, we were looking for an adult today, but we didn't get an adult. We have a child who cannot govern their own emotion. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think Draymond knows what he's doing. He continues to do it. There is a correctable behavior that he refuses to engage in. And that's why, here's the thing. He loves being the bad guy. He does. He absolutely relishes the role of the man in the black cape. He does. He likes it. He's got a Subway commercial out right now where he's arguing with the other spokesman in the Subway commercial. That's what he does.
But the commercial is, you know, taking a caricature of him and blowing it up.
Right.
The thing is,
this is not a time to break down the commercial.
No. I'm not trying to break down the commercial. It's he can't control it because if he couldn't control it, he'd be doing it in minute 3. He'd have been ejected from 9 games so far. He can control it. He's smart enough to control it. He has enough control of his emotions to do that. It's that moment when there's a slight involved in his mind. And those are the times when he has to be able, because he can do it. That's the idea that he's not able to control his emotions is nonsense. There are times when you don't get the luxury of being pissy. To put it bluntly, that's a luxury that, frankly, even LeBron James, who gets more than his share of technicals, doesn't get. You know, you don't get to lose your mind in any game that matters. And even if it's a game that doesn't matter, you know, you can change the tone of that game by losing your brain. So he knows how to do this. It's just, you know, I don't want to say it anymore, but it's time and score. It's just, you know, pick your spots and go once, don't go twice.
We've got Matt Barnes joining us at 4:00. There's a guy who knows a little bit about governing on-court emotions or maybe letting those emotions govern you. I know it's happened a time or two in his career. Matt Barnes, one of the more interesting dudes on planet basketball, joining us at 4:00 today to talk not just about Draymond and the Warriors weekend, obviously, but about the NBA, the latest stuff they got cooking up on his podcast, All the Smoke. And so a conversation with Matt Barnes at the top of the hour that we're very looking forward to. We've got to ask a couple questions to the NHL. The same question I would ask the folks who designed Levi's Stadium. Were you not planning for the sun? Like, you didn't see the sun coming Did that sneak up on you? Rises in the East, sets in the West. But today, it snuck up on you. That's what the NHL is basically saying. And we will talk about how we go from melting ice to miracles on ice in the same conversation, which brings us up to Matt Barnes at 4 o'clock. We promise not too much hockey, but we do have some absurdity. And we have a theater of the absurd. I love the theater. So we're going to go there next. 888-957-9570 is the number. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Our Exergen temperature check, because accuracy indeed does matter. Right now tells us it's a sunny, beautiful 72-degree day in downtown Oakland.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Welcome. I never liked the drink Sunny D, but I thought that Sunny D had a really good commercial at one point in time where the father was dressed like the son and everyone's sitting around the table and the father comes in. He's the son. And they're like, "What are you doing today at work, Dad?" And he's like, "Oh, just heating and lighting the world. That's all I got to go do." It ain't easy being the son. The son apparently made it to Lake Tahoe this weekend, which kind of put a kibosh in best laid plans by Gary Bettman in the NHL. If you tuned in to watch a little outdoor hockey at Lake Tahoe on Sunday, you got maybe not a great game, but you got a beautiful setting. Lake Tahoe never made anything uglier, that's for sure. If you tuned in on Saturday, you didn't get much of anything because the game had to be canceled because of melting ice after the first period. Oh, NHL. I don't want to say that you had all these available rinks just at your disposal that you chose not to use to come to Tahoe to do this. But, Ray, that's exactly what they did. The NHL has been putting on outdoor games now for years. Why didn't it work up in Tahoe? I've certainly seen the sun in Chicago, in St. Louis, in other places they've done this. I didn't see melted ice then. What went wrong this weekend?
Well, I will only quote Gary Bettman. Sunshine has always been our enemy. And that's kind of a tough fight to pick. I think what it was is they didn't think that it would be not just sunny, but sort of warm for conditions. They've had outdoor games that they had to stop and resurface the ice. But it's usually, you know, on an overcast day, but if it's 50 or 55. You know, what happened was they got sun. The sun created warmth. And the rink went to hell. I mean, they eventually got the game finished, but they had to do it, you know, a game that started at noon got finished at 11 because they took a seven-hour break to wait for conditions to change. And what they were going for, you know, eventually was the pretty optics. And, yeah, optics are great. Though they had great scenery. But you can go to Tahoe and get great scenery without a hockey game. So if you're going to have that, you know, either play the game at night where you have at least a fighting chance of the temperature being around 4, or don't play it there at all. I mean, they've had bad ice, like I said, at big events like that before. They had terrible ice in San Jose the year they played it at Levi's. You know, it's just, there are places where ice melts. It's, you know, and if you're going to do outdoor games, you should do it at a place where you know pretty much you're going to get, you know, freezing temperatures or thereabouts, or you play the game late enough where you can sort of mitigate whatever the problems are. And they didn't do that. So, I mean, it was an interesting idea that they couldn't follow through on because they can't control the sun. Who'd have guessed?
Here's the thing. When I go to a hockey game, it's not 27 degrees inside that building. Which is to say, if you want to make the ice cooler than the surroundings, we have the technology, folks. That technology is available. If you could not install that technology here, then as Ray says, there are plenty of places you could have chosen where you could have virtually guaranteed you would have sub-freezing temperatures. And if you, Gary Bettman, are going to tell me that the sun has always been your enemy since time immemorial, then why have you not found a solution for this particular problem, given that A, you have the technology, and B, you could have played it somewhere else? What on earth could have possessed you to not be prepared for this issue?
If sun is your enemy, you should probably done this indoors in a hockey rink. You chose not to. Embracing outdoor hockey rink technology is something they do at Rockefeller Center. It's something they do in downtown San Francisco.
Union Square.
Union Square has nice afternoon days where you're not wearing a parka, but somehow we're out here still skating. How's that happen? Again.
Well, technology. The problem is they want it not only cold, but they want it scenic. I mean, and there are places to do that. You could go up to Alberta and do this at Lake Louise.
Sure.
You know, there are, you know, you could do this, you know, a lot of places. But what they didn't want this time, for whatever reason, is they didn't want the backdrop to be, you know, like Michigan Stadium when they had it at Ann Arbor. They wanted mountains and they wanted water. They wanted, you know, the illusion of pond hockey.
Do it in the Adirondacks. Do it in the Catskills,
yeah,
then.
Yeah. Niagara Falls.
Sure. How about,
you know, there are a lot of places where you get scenery and cold.
Here's
so do
deal.
It. Pick
the, up. The 1960 Olympics at Squaw had, I'm sure, what they kind of wanted to replicate, that Olympic level hockey feel, and that was just a few miles away from the actual location that they picked. The difference was, is that was under a pavilion, which then burnt down several years later, which is why it's not there. But that rink that they played the 1960 hockey for the Olympics on was under a roof. Like, they understood sun bad in 1960 with all the advances in technology. Look, Gary Bettman, I don't want to say you're bad at this, but every single time you step out, you prove how bad you are at that. I mean, I just don't get it. You can't be the commissioner of the NHL and not get ice right. I mean, come on. A sheet of ice?
Well, it's the ice you can control to a certain extent, but you cannot control nature. And that's the level of arrogance. Just, well, it's February, you know, it's at altitude. Of course it's going to be cold. Well, it isn't always cold there. You know, it was cold that night. You could have done it then. But the problem is, if you play at night, then you can't see the lake. Well, then go to a place where you can have cold and a lake and the sun. And that you have to go, you know, several degrees of latitude.
Yeah, go to the North Pole.
Get your ass up to Canada and do it there.
Do it right underneath the Aurora Borealis. You want to put some nature on your top of your hockey game? There you go. You ever see the Aurora Borealis? That's freaking amazing.
Yeah, they could have done this up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where they have scenery that's just as breathtaking, and they have the Northern Lights, which means they wouldn't have had to light the game at all. You know, it's just the Red Wings would have felt like they were playing on peyote, which might have had its own value.
Totally.
You could have built, you could have built an ice rink in Grant Park. Like, there's dozens, literally dozens of places to do this. It really is. It's impressive that they chose so poorly.
And I
was just going to say, one of the great arguments for doing it here would have been to have the Sharks there, and they didn't even do that.
How bad was the ice, really? Like, worse than Madison Square Garden ice after a Knicks game? Like, worse than old Boston Garden? Like, the ice at the old Boston Garden was so bad that the parquet floor wasn't the only spot that had dead spots on it. Like, I mean, like, how bad was it? Must have been like a Slurpee out there for them to say, we can't go on. And apparently a bunch of players did want to go on. But anyways, way to screw it up, NHL. No one takes a good idea, sprinkles a little bit of brand of watch no one pay attention to hockey on it, quite like hockey does, and get away with it. Here's another thing, just to let you know that hockey really doesn't know what to do in terms of marketing itself or becoming more popular, really at any moment in its American history. One of the greatest moments in sports did more for the broadcaster that called it than the sport that allowed the broadcaster to have a signature moment. 41 years ago today, Do You Believe in Miracles happened. February 22nd, Lake Placid, 1980, and here it is. All these years later, 41 years later, a 4-3 win over Russia. Then remember, you got to go out and beat Finland, boys. Don't lose that or you'll never forget it. 4-2 win over Finland for the gold. Jim Craig stood on his head while Tradiak got pulled. And the phrase Tradiak got pulled means an awful lot more to a generation that was more than a generation that is. He was the greatest goaltender on the planet. And the Russians pulled him after allowing a late goal, and you've seen the movie. Hopefully you've seen the actual sporting event. It's better than the movie. But that's something else. That was a great moment. And again, it did more for Al Michaels than it did for hockey in America.
Yeah, he got rich off of that baby. And it's weird because most sports movies suck on their face. But the miracle, the one with Kurt Russell playing Herb Brooks, did the one thing that movies don't do nearly enough. They stuck to the facts.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't gussy it up. I mean, because the story told itself. And that's the one thing that, you know, irks me more than anything else about most movies is you've got a perfectly good story. That's why you spent money on to have it, you know, treated for a screenplay. So follow the story because, frankly, nonfiction is always weirder than fiction is.
Yeah. Again, don't let a whole bunch of dramatic. We got some notes back from the studio and we need to make these touches to the movie. No, you have an actual story that you're trying to tell. And that is a really good sports movie. There's no doubt about it. Miracle was really well done. And it's because Kurt Russell doesn't try to get romantic or sweet. He plays the abrasive, I'm not here to be your friend, Coach Herb Brooks that really defined who he was. Anyway, we suggest you check that out, and we are about to get you and everyone. Sacramento, this is for you. I'm trying to time it the best of my ability that I can. I'm really not going to try any harder than this. Welcome, everyone, to your 4 o'clock hour.
You should probably be ashamed to have to admit this, but you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Now we got to do the big dramatic pause because Sacramento has now taken the D'Lo and KC show for 4 hours a day. So congratulations. I know those two guys worked really, really hard for their opportunity. Sacramento 1320 certainly deserves a Sacramento-based radio show. So congratulations to Damian Barlow and Kenny Caraway and all their success. And you're a great opening act. We're happy to follow you with half the show. And we saved the best half of the show to start right at our 4 o'clock hour. And Matt Barnes is ready to join us here on 95.7 The Game to talk about the Warriors, a frustrating weekend, Draymond and the season as it's going, and what he's seen so far. Of course, the All the Smoke podcast is omnipresent in basketball conversations these days. Matt Barnes, thanks for joining us, man. Always appreciate it when you pick up the phone to talk to us. How are you?
Oh, well, how about yourself?
We're doing really, really well, thank you. Better than the Warriors, who had a couple of rough losses in Orlando and then in Charlotte. They let double-digit fourth quarters slip through their fingers. In Charlotte, they didn't have Steph Curry the entire game, who was a late scratch. And Draymond Green decided to scratch himself from the end of that game because he couldn't keep his emotions in check. And I feel like we've told this story once or twice before. What did you think of how the Warriors let one go in Charlotte on Saturday night, Matt?
It's a tough situation. You know, learning to win and close out games is important for teams. Obviously, you know, we're accustomed to this championship dynasty team that is filled with veterans and makes everything look easy. But, you know, those days are over. You know, Clay's on the sidelines still. Steph is playing great, but he, you know, with him being a late scratch, that's going to put them behind the eight ball. But it's still, you know, no excuse to blow fourth quarter leads with or without him. So, like I said, normally you would have another calming presence in there, you know, outside of Steph and Draymond is off and on as far as calming, but he's definitely a presence. But they missed the veteran leadership of the Iguodalas, the Sean Livingston, the David West, to kind of help teach these guys how to close games because it's not as easy as it sounds. A lot of younger teams go through stuff like this, and outside of Draymond and Steph, this is a fairly young team. So it's just the process of growing and struggling, and you know, it'll all pay dividends next season.
In terms of Draymond Green, you know, people like to talk about, you know, his high motor and his, you know, occasional volatility. Is that something that for most players, I'm not asking you to be an expert on Draymond, but for most players, is it more difficult to turn that volatility on and off than it seems to outsiders?
I wouldn't call it necessarily volatility. I would call it just it's who he is. It's what makes him great, but it also can be his downfall. And, you know, I was similar in that aspect of my career. You know, we play with so much passion, love, and energy that we kind of feel like in certain situations, you know, whether we're right or we're wrong, we know if we're going to get beat, let us get beat, but don't take it away from us. And I think that's where he kind of felt, you know, obviously last game that he was ejected, it was taken away with the call. But, you know, he and I talked later that night, and I told him, you know, it's just something, although he may have feel like he's right, it's something from his point of view and his position on this team now that it can't be done, and he completely understood it. But it's not something you can turn all the way off. You got to take the good and the great with the sometimes bad, and that's what you get with Draymond, because, like I said, this organization wouldn't be who they are without Draymond Green's passion and energy behind it.
You know, we all have a ton of respect for Draymond and feel the same way as what you just said at the end there. But like you just said, this is something that you struggled with to some extent in your career.
Yep.
How do you make sure that while you're keeping your fire and your energy, you don't cross that line in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, you never want to hurt your team in any aspect. And obviously, you know, losing him hurts the team, but also, you know, the two free throws they got to tie the game hurt them. And it's just, it comes with maturity, you know what I mean? And not to say he's not mature, but he's continuing to grow, and he understands his faults, and he admitted his faults, I think, in an interview talking about what happened last game. So it's just a process. You know, I'm he's giving you much more good than he's giving bad, and I just think right now is, you know, during these last two games they let slip away. Obviously, this is going to be a talking point, but at the end of the day, he does a lot more good, you know, that is outside the numbers that he does that are bad, that is bad.
Matt Barnes here with us on 95.7 The Game. So James Wiseman, who's missed, I believe, 11 games now with his wrist injury, is eventually going to get back into the mix here. I know he's questionable. He and Looney and Steph all officially listed as questionable for tomorrow, and fingers crossed they will go at the New York Knicks. Wiseman out with the injury. Where should his eyes have been? What should have he been working on? And how do you hope to see him assimilated back with the team? If you're Kerr, are you just going to throw him back into the starting five, or might you bring him off the bench? How would you mix James Wiseman back in with the Warriors?
I would mix him slowly but surely. You know, I think he's shown what he's capable of. So obviously in his off time, I'm sure he was watching what was going on, you know, like most young players and players in general, and kind of figuring out where he could be most effective. But I like this young player. I think they really got a steal in James. You know, you normally don't steal at that high of a pick, but this kid has a great motor and a tremendous upside. And learning from people like Draymond and having Steph there with his wisdom and experience and that coaching staff, I think has really been a perfect recipe for him. I mean, his numbers may not be as big as other rookies, but he's really learning how to play the game of basketball. And someone who didn't really get a chance to play in college, his only real experience is high school, you know, in this NBA.